Broadcasting live from Wilmington, North Carolina, it's time for Cape Fear Seniors, where those who impact seniors' lives gather to tell their stories.
Hello, I'm Tom Petcher. I'm the host of Cape Fear Seniors. Welcome to the show, and I'd like to introduce our guest for today. Helene Levy is an attorney with the elder law firm of Andrew Olson, and Sharon LaQuire is a geriatric care manager with A Piece of Home. I'm going to start with Sharon, but we're going to sort of bounce around from guest to guest today. Sharon, you are with A Piece of Home. That's P-E-A-C-E.
That's correct.
First of all, tell me what A Piece of Home is and why Peace.
Okay. A Piece of Home is an elder law, an elder care company that focuses on geriatric care management. We work with senior adults all over North Carolina, with offices in Charlotte and offices here in Wilmington, North Carolina. And we work with families. The typical call we get is a family who calls and says, I've been to see mom. She's not doing well. I don't know what to do. I don't know where to turn. Can you help me? So our goal then is to go in and help determine what the best next step would be for that client, with the goal always trying to keep them at home as long as we possibly can.
Independence is obviously your goal.
Independence is always the goal.
Right. Geriatric care manager, what exactly does that term mean? I mean, is it all kinds of care? Is it a certain specific kinds of care?
It is geared toward the elderly, the senior adult, and it's a specialty. Generally, geriatric care managers are either registered nurses, they have a psychology background, they have a social work background, they have a health care administration type of background. So they're specialized in the care of the elderly, focusing on coordination of care.
Coordinating care from many different sources.
Many different sources.
Including legal sources, I assume.
Legal sources as well. As a matter of fact,
our company
works with Helene and the elder law firm of Andrew Olson. We do their geriatric care management.
And that's a great segue. Helene, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your firm, what you do, and the kinds of clients you work with.
Okay. Well, we have a holistic elder law practice.
What does that mean exactly?
I'm so glad you asked, because it's becoming such an important part of what we do. The holistic aspect is really taking into account someone's entire life. Just like living a life isn't one-dimensional, the practice of elder law isn't one-dimensional either. So it's not just about the documents. I actually had somebody, I was just going to share this quickly, come in to meet with me, and I said, so what's going on? And she immediately reached for her satchel filled with papers and was ruffling through them. And I said, no, I meant what's going on with you. Mm-hmm. You know, so this is just not about the documents. So that's what we do. We have asset protection that we focus on, funding long-term care. And we have, I work with three other attorneys. Andy is our certified elder law attorney. That's a CELA designation.
Andy is Andrew Olson.
He has, that's a certification given by the National Elder Law Foundation. I have an LLM in elder law. That's an advanced degree in elder law, a two-year course of study that I did to do that.
Without getting too granular, what does LLM exactly represent?
It's Latin for Master of Laws.
Uh-huh.
And it's just an advanced degree, master's degree in law.
And your LLM is in elder care?
In elder law, gotcha. Yes. Lisa is the other attorney in our office, and she has an advanced degree in LLM in taxation. We also have Eileen, who does our civil litigation, our breach of fiduciary duty, financial exploitation cases, and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. So what are the biggest challenges you think that older people face? You talked about a holistic approach covering a whole range of different areas, not just the paper, as you put it, which I think is a great, great tagline. But what kinds of issues do people face that you have to contend with on a daily basis?
How much time do we have?
Just start talking. We'll go from there.
Okay, because I have four, and I just, you know, jotted them down because mm-hmm. I just wanted to focus on the four. I mean, there are so many. But I think the rise of the dementia-type diseases that we're seeing, cognitive impairment, this is a huge and growing area that we have now between life and death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's plaguing our nation, definitely. And so part of my course of study in the advanced program, I was able to really study what mental capacity is and how to assess it from a legal standpoint, because there are different thresholds of capacity when we're talking about doing certain legal tasks or executing documents. Mm-hmm. And so you have to be able to assess that capacity. And capacity is fluid. It fluctuates.
From phase to phase of life, as well as, I'm sure, from day to day in some cases.
From day to day, it's circumstantial. It depends on where you are. Some people who have been in a extended hospital stay can become disoriented.
Right.
You really have to know what you're looking for in order to be able to elicit the capacity that's required. And I think my concern is that there are family members that will say to me, well, Mom doesn't know what she did yesterday, so she doesn't have capacity. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean short-term memory lapse does not equate to incapacity.
So it's really an ongoing evaluation is what you're saying.
It's an ongoing evaluation, and it is something that you have to determine at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It could be there 1 minute, and then later on that day, not be there.
No, that's a really, really good observation. I want to switch gears for just a moment. I want to go back into some of those issues that you see people facing on a regular basis. But get back to Sharon and A Piece of Home. What are the signs you need to look for someone who might need your services as a geriatric case manager, whether it's the individual himself or herself or the family?
That's a great question. There is a myriad of signs to look for. The typical thing that we see from the family is the call that I've been to see Mom, and I'm not sure she's eating like she used to. She looks like she's lost weight.
Mm-hmm.
Or I'm worried. Daddy used to keep the front lawn so meticulous, and now the weeds are growing. They can be very subtle signs like that. It can be things such as they're not taking their medicine anymore. That I have had clients that I've gone in to sort of help the family evaluate what their needs might be, and I find things like the refrigerator is no longer full of good food. It's full of Hot Pockets in the freezer.
Gotcha.
And they're living off of Hot Pockets.
Mm-hmm.
Or I look at the medicines that they're taking. I had a client, for example, that had become a recent widower. And he was a very severe diabetic and a very severe cardiac patient. But he said to me, you know, the doctor told me I'm a cardiac patient. I don't think I am. He said, but I do take medicine, and here it is. And he showed me the Digoxin, which is a very strong cardiac drug.
Mm-hmm.
And the prescription said one tablet every morning. And so I opened the bottle. And there were lots of half tablets in there. And I said, tell me about the half tablets. He said, oh, I don't think I've really got heart disease. I take them every once in a while when I feel like maybe I should.
And he splits them in half.
And he splits them in half.
On top of that.
So it's those kinds of things that can be very subtle, or they can be very obvious, like those kinds of things, that the families oftentimes just don't know when to get worried and when to just say, oh, that's just daddy. And those issues like Helene was talking about with the dementia, those very early signs of the dementia where the family is so frustrated because Mom or Daddy's no longer doing like they used to do, and they think they're just being stubborn, when in fact that could be a very subtle sign of the very beginnings of the dementia process.
So you do something you call a couch visit. Can you talk about that? That follows the initial query by the family.
That's exactly.
After
we've gotten the phone call, and we always try to go into the home. You cannot make a determination over the telephone.
It's what we call sometimes a home assessment.
That's exactly right. So we'll actually go into the home. Sometimes the family wants to be there. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes the client doesn't want the daughter to be there. So we sort of do what the natural need would be for that. But we go in and we do what we call the couch conversation. We go in not with the white jacket on, not with a stethoscope around our neck. We're going in to develop a relationship. Because with our senior adults, without that relationship and that sense of trust, they're not going to be open to discussing anything with you. So we go in, introduce ourselves. They know we're coming. And we go in and we just sit down and we begin by finding out about them. Tell us about your life. And, of course, they always love to tell you about their grandchildren and tell you about where they grew up and sort of their history. So we let them talk about those kinds of things, working on that relationship. And that becomes really our couch conversation, just developing that relationship and then moving into the more clinical areas of your medications. And we want to get a tour of the home because, you know, there's all sorts of possibilities for danger in the home
with
the senior adult.
There are hazards.
Huge hazards. Everything from the rug that slips to the coffee pot that's too close to the edge, to the stove that has a burner that's not working. I went in one home recently down in the Ocean Isle area with a client, and she had dangling wires from the ceiling where some of the fire preventive things had been disconnected, and she didn't even realize it. So looking at those kinds of things as part of our couch conversation to try to make the holistic decision then about what the client actually needs. They don't always need something. And that's very reassuring to the family member when I can say, I've checked your mom. She's doing fine. We just need to continue what we're doing now. But our goal is always with that couch conversation and that assessment to try to do what we can do and offer guidance and solutions to help keep mom at home as long as possible. Because there's no place like their home. And as long as we can keep them there safely, then that's our goal. And that's what the couch conversation is designed to do, to help us make that determination.
You know, can I just tack on to that? Because Sharon and I, like Sharon mentioned, we work together. And this is, she's touched on a huge point, because we'll get calls into our office for people that want to maybe transition from one state to another. Or they're...
You mean from one state?
From,
meaning,
I'm sorry, from one state to another.
Meaning from Maryland to North Carolina, for example.
Right. Okay. To or from...
Not a state of being.
Right.
Right.
Although we can talk about that. But so they call and they want, they really need information. And when we work with Sharon, we're able to to determine what the optimal living situation is, the best accommodation for that person based on their financial status and where they are and what they want for their future. But the most important thing, I think, is really working with families to be watching for those declines in cognitive functioning. And that's where Sharon and I work together when we go into, sometimes we walk into a nursing home or an assisted living facility, that's the last place that that person's going to call home. And so it's really important that that person maintain a voice, their independence, their autonomy. And we need family members to advocate on behalf of those people.
And that's a real interesting point, too. We have clients from time to time, particularly the dementia client, where the son or the daughter is so frustrated with mom or dad. And we do a lot of work and a lot of teaching with family members about better approaches to use. They'll get so frustrated, they'll start fussing at mom. I had a client recently in Charlotte that was saying to her son as we were visiting, you know, Johnny's going to be here tomorrow. And the son, who was a very well-educated, very wonderful family, put his hands on his hips and said, Mom, you know Johnny's been dead for 7 years. So sort of chastising and arguing with. And so we had to sort of pull away a little later on in a very appropriate way and have a conversation with that son about more appropriate ways to live in her moment and not in his moment. So a lot of education goes into what we do as well to sort of work, because the families don't intend to be rude or hurt mom's feelings. They're just so frustrated and think mom can do better than she's doing.
Well, this, and there's so many family dynamics involved
in those
kinds of exchanges and history that goes way, way back.
That's exactly right.
And you actually bring up a point that I want to go back to with Helene, that this whole business of how reality can change and how people's awareness can change from moment to moment, from day to day, it's a fascinating concept, and I'd like to talk a little bit more about that.
Sure.
Do you see it in practice all the time?
Exactly what?
Well, the whole business of someone being in one place at one point and then kind of shifting over to another place where they weren't, don't remember exactly what happened, but then being much more cognizant and able to deal with reality the following day.
Yeah, I mean, it's really just, we do see that all the time, fluctuations. And so somebody can be lucid and really understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. And then later on that day, a sundowning happens as they get tired. They just can't seem to reason like they did. And so when we're doing assessments, if I walk into a home to execute legal documents and to explain to that person, I've had a meeting with them, I've assessed their capacity, but if they're not there that day, I can't have them execute that document. They have to be lucid and clear-minded at the moment that we're actually executing.
And we have to take into consideration where they've been. It's so common. They've been in the hospital, from home to the hospital. They're in the hospital a couple of weeks. Maybe they've had a fractured hip. They've had surgery. They go from there to a skilled rehab center. So they've gone from home that they knew to a nursing home with all new people, all new environment. And maybe they're starting to get adjusted there just in time for them to be relocated to a skilled facility.
Right.
All new people, the whole nine yards.
It's
and
very
then maybe to an assisted living.
Loss of control.
So complete loss of control and very disconcerting, very confusing. And families will think that she's gone off the deep end forever.
Yes.
When in actuality, it's just learning to process and work through all the different phases that she's going through. That doesn't mean she's lost capacity forever.
No, and Tom, Sharon and I also have been in situations where it's really been a matter of medical misdiagnosis
at the time.
Yes, or medication administration issues, right, where they're some medication that they're taking is interacting with something.
Oh, yeah. Conflicting.
And it really is exhibiting these dementia-type symptoms, and it's really not that. And once we get the underlying physical condition stabilized, that person snaps too.
Exactly.
Wow.
Right.
It's remarkable. So, but it requires attention.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's one of the things that
ongoing attention.
Ongoing. And that's one of the things the assessment does, is looking at all the medicines and looking what interacts with each other. Mm-hmm. And so many of our clients, they maybe have two or three, four
physicians,
different doctors.
Right.
And so this doctor's got them on this anti-anxiety drug, and the next doctor's got them on an antipsychotic drug. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden it snowballed, mm-hmm. into no wonder the resident's confused.
Yeah, and some of them are the slightest of people. I mean, they're thin, and they just don't.
Exactly.
Their bodies can't contend with that conflict of medication.
And we do a lot of educating of facility staff as well from time to time, because they just might miss it.
Mm-hmm.
And someone coming in new,
yes,
that doesn't
objective.
See it every day, can sort of pick up on those changes that might be subtle to a facility staff that we see quite honestly and quite quickly, mm-hmm. because we're not there every day.
Right, exactly.
And this is where capacity, I just want to focus on this.
Sure.
Capacity comes in very critically, because in most of what I do, it's never too late to take action. But in the case of capacity, it can be. And so that's why working with Sharon and her educating family members to watch for these kinds of declines is so important, because when you do have diminished mental capacity to such a point where you no longer possess the capacity to do certain things, you're looking at a guardianship proceeding.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that is, you're relinquishing all of your control to a court, and you're incurring all of that expense, and you're stripping someone of their individual civil liberties. I mean, it's tremendous. And so if you can put the least restrictive alternatives in place, which are powers of attorney, mm-hmm. that you do when you have capacity, you do that. And so if you're a family member and you see somebody that you love, or a friend for that matter, that is taking a decline and is showing evidence of mild or moderate impairment, you need to take action.
Exactly.
So you're suggesting that if I'm hearing correctly, that guardianship is different than power of attorney. Is it just
it's the extreme,
okay.
Right? It's the most extreme case, because
right.
you're no longer able to make decisions for yourself, and so somebody has to make them for you. It's a court-appointed person, that's a guardianship, or it's someone that when you had control and choice, you chose that person. And that's what everybody wants,
right.
Control.
And that control is the key. I hear that from my clients all the time. I don't want to lose control. I don't want my daughter making decisions for me. I don't want my son telling me where I'm going to go, where I'm going to live. And what families, I work hard to explain to families, is no matter how well-intended you are still the daughter, or you're the son of that lady or that dad. And in their eyes, you're a kid. You're a child.
Mm-hmm.
And they just hesitate and try to control the fact that you're not going to tell me what I'm going to do. And we work a lot with families in trying to educate them on the importance and approaches to use to not dictate to mom, but that's where we can come in. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes they'll listen to me, for example, because I'm an outsider.
Right.
I'm not that daughter that they raised, that they think they remember that snotty nose, and that child will never know as much as I do about what I need.
I read a statistic yesterday that 70% of us at some point after the age of 65 will require long-term care and care in the home, mm-hmm. whether it is home care, mm-hmm. skilled or non-medical or living in a facility or whatever. Can we talk a little bit from both your perspectives about long-term care insurance? It's out there. It's getting more and more attention. More and more people are looking at it as a possibility. In your experience, is this a good idea?
In my experience, it's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I will tell you that the people that come in to see me that have long-term care insurance fare far better than those that don't.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That is a fact. And what we're finding is that there are, and I didn't take advantage of it, I have a traditional long-term care insurance policy, which means I'm paid up until age 65, and I get all the nursing home, assisted living, and in-home care benefits. But if I don't use that, I lose it. Mm-hmm. So now they have these fantastic hybrid vehicles where you can do a life insurance policy with a long-term care rider. The underwriting requirements are lower because, remember, long-term care insurance, the pre-existing conditions don't apply, or I'm sorry, they do apply to long-term care insurance. Under the Affordable Care Act, with regular health insurance, you can no longer take into account mm-hmm. someone's pre-existing condition, but still with long-term care insurance, you can. So with these hybrids, there are lower underwriting requirements. So you can really get a good deal as long as you can pay your premium, because you don't want that to lapse. And if you don't use a long-term care, somebody will get a death benefit. And so it's a better use of your money.
There's also now an option where you can actually convert an existing life insurance policy into long-term care support.
That's
not
correct.
Into a policy, but it's support, which I find to be a fascinating concept because so many people out there have carried life insurance policies their whole lives. They took them out initially when they were younger because they wanted to protect their families. Now their families are independent. They're out there. The kids are working and they're on their own. They've got their own life insurance policies. And maybe the policy premium is becoming a bit of a burden.
Yes.
And so many people, I understand, let those policies lapse after all that paying in, and they lose everything.
That's a mistake.
You can actually turn into an FDIC-insured account to help pay for long-term care in a number of different platforms, which I think is great.
That's fantastic.
Sharon, how many people who you work with do you think, estimate, have the long-term care insurance policies?
Very few.
Very few.
Very few.
So it's not anywhere near as ubiquitous as it should be at this point.
Oh, no, right. Absolutely. And they're quick to say, I wish I had done that when I was earlier, but
right.
I didn't.
Right. Are we getting better at training younger people to see that as an option for insurance needs?
Yeah. I think so. And I think, it's a very startling education when we deal with our clients and their adult children who come into the office and they hear what we're talking about.
They get scared.
And they do. They're really confronted with thinking about these things and saying, you know what, I've got to pay attention to this and get something done. Mm-hmm. And that's really good.
You both must be very conversant with the kind of agencies and offerings that are out there in the New Hanover, Greater New Hanover area, Brunswick, Lower Cape Fear area that are opportunities for seniors. Can we talk about some of those agencies
Absolutely.
That you work with on
sure.
a regular basis?
Oh, yes. Both Sharon and I are with the Area Agency on Aging
right.
on their Elder Abuse Prevention Network.
Right. Mm-hmm. Holly Pilsen was a guest on the show.
Right, I saw
She's
that.
She's fantastic.
Yeah. She is great.
That is an angel
mm-hmm.
walking. Mm-hmm. I'm on the Brunswick Senior Resource Incorporated. They run the senior services in Brunswick County.
Jim Fish was a guest on this show.
Jim Fish is also another angel, and he's just doing tremendous work, and I mean astoundingly tremendous work. And so that's just an honor to be part of that. But yes, there are so many things that people can avail themselves of now. And
yeah, senior advisory services, too, in
yes.
New Hanover mm-hmm. County is another mm-hmm. great service that's out there for seniors. And of course, there's a lot of local companies too, some Synergy mm-hmm. and many others. And so as part of my couch conversation and assessment, I'm looking at which service best meets the need of that particular client at that particular time. So we are fortunate that there are lots of available services that are out there. It's just locating the right one, whether it's medical or non-medical, whether it includes physical therapy, speech therapy, occupational therapy, those kinds of things. So it's case by case. But we are fortunate that there are a lot of available resources and a lot of good people.
And in New Hanover County, we have PACE,
right.
yes.
the program
mm-hmm.
for all-inclusive care.
Right.
So Brunswick County, unfortunately, if you go well into Brunswick County, you don't get that. But that's a tremendous asset.
There is a rather rich network of
yes.
support for
and
for
I've got
seniors.
To say one thing about PACE. Mm-hmm. Having had opportunities to work outside of New Hanover County, not all PACEs are equal. And our New Hanover County group, they are absolutely fabulous. They're there in a moment's notice. Mm-hmm. They're eager to help, and they'll do everything they possibly can for that client to make them be able to take advantage of that service.
And so they have great exercise equipment, too. They've yes, really invested in their exercise rehab.
Can't mm-hmm. say enough good things about our PACE.
PACE is located right across from the hospital.
That's right.
On
mm-hmm.
the 16th and 17th quarter.
That's right.
They've got a lot of good services, and we'll probably have someone from there on the show fairly soon. Before we wrap up, I did want to get right back into the long-term care. From both your perspectives, from the family perspective, from maybe the financial perspective, Sharon and Helene, is it ever too late to start to prepare for long-term care? In other words, is there ever an age where you just say, oh, done, over, I can't go near there?
No,
never.
Tell me why.
You know, even if you are at the door of a nursing home and you have not done any pre-planning, there is always something that you can do to protect some of your assets so that you can use them for your benefit. I'm not talking about an inheritance now.
Right.
I'm talking about you can use it to your benefit to supplement some of the things that public benefits might not be able to do. It is never, ever too late. And I tell people that.
And there's always a plan B. You know, if things aren't working out in this facility, for example, the client's not happy there, the family's not happy there, there's always a plan B. And that's where I can get involved in helping them make different decisions about the next step. So she's exactly right. It is never too late for our senior population.
That's good to know. I want to thank Helene Levy, attorney with Elder Law Firm of Andrew Olson. And I want to thank Sharon LaQuire, geriatric care manager with A Piece of Home, for being on the show today. As we wrap up, if you could just get us some contact information so listeners can actually find out a way to learn about more about A Piece of Home and more about the law firm of Andrew Olson, that'd be great.
Sure. Well, A Piece of Home, again, P-E-A-C-E, A Piece of Home.
P-E-A-C-E.
P-E-A-C-E, exactly. I can be reached by phone at any time, 910-465-8833. My phone's with me all the time, and I always answer. And our website is www.apieceofhome.org, not .com, .org. Mm-hmm. And then we also have, I think on what you'll have, both our LinkedIn and Facebook pages.
And you're located in Charlotte as well.
Located in Charlotte as well. And work all over North Carolina.
Good to know. Mm-hmm. Helene?
Yeah, we're the elder law firm of Andrew Olson, www.olsonelderlaw.com. I also am available by cell phone at all hours, 910-547-5909.
Thank you both for being guests on Cape Fear Senior Says. Great to have you.
It was our pleasure. Thank you.
It was really fun.